and welcome to the latest instalment of the Championship Chat podcast, your home of news, views and debate from England's second tier. We're back in action once again this week, refreshed after our own international break, and we're ready to dive through all the latest Championship action. As always, I'm your host, Elliot Jackson, sports wire writer for Reach PLC. On this week's show, I'm delighted to be joined once again by George Smith, freelance football writer and commentator. How are you doing, George?
I'm very well, thanks, Elliot. Are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Good to have you again. And also joining myself and George is Tom Coates, freelance football writer. How are you doing, Tom?
Yeah, good, thanks. Good to be back on. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate. Nice week off, just relaxing before getting back into the swing of the podcast. So great to have you both back on the show again today. Quick reminder that you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at ChampChatPod. We've had a little bit of a revamp online, so that's the new handle to find us at. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast through your preferred provider to make sure you get the latest episode of the Championship Chat podcast for free every single week. Coming up on the show today, we're going to talk about some managerial movement as Sheffield Wednesday appoint Gary Monk, whilst across Yorkshire, Danny Cowley also looks set to be the new Huddersfield Town manager, expecting an appointment imminently. For the Terriers, we're also going to look back at some of the most recent Championship action, with Brentford beating Derby 3-0, and we're also going to assess how West Brom have started life under Slaven Bilic. Then got our weekly quiz for Tom and George to go head-to-head at before looking at our big match previews, some cracking games on this weekend, and we'll round off the show, as always, with our shocks and bankers. So, we're going to start at Hillsborough this week on the podcast, and Sheffield Wednesday have appointed Gary Monk as their new permanent manager on Friday. The Owls have been under the guidance of Lee Bullen for the opening six games of the season after Steve Bruce's shock departure in the summer to join Newcastle United. But with three wins and three defeats from a relatively friendly-looking fixture list, Depon Chancery has opted for some more experience in the dugout with Gary Monk. He was obviously last in work with Birmingham City, a post he held for 15 months before his summer departure, which came as a bit of a shock to the Championship community, I think it's fair to say. George, I'm going to start with you, being a Sheffield Wednesday fan. Firstly, I just want to gauge how surprised you are by the appointment, really, given it was a bit of a bolt from the blue, I think it's fair to say. Monk was sort of always in and around the betting odds, but there was never really any talk of him being sort of the favourite at any point until about 24 hours before he got appointed.
Yeah, it certainly came out of nowhere, that's for sure. He was appointed on Friday, and on Tuesday evening, the news had come out that supposedly Danny Cowley was in advance talks with Sheffield Wednesday about getting the job. So for a couple of days, it went quiet. Cowley denied the claims, but people thought, right, oh, managers always say this, that there's nothing in it, like Steve Bruce did when he went to Newcastle. So it looks severely likely that Wednesday were going to get Danny Cowley and he was going to come to Hillsborough. But then out of nowhere, Sheffield Wednesday announced a press conference at lunchtime on Friday saying there's going to be one at 4 o'clock. And immediately the odds are slashed on Gary Monk. And at that point, you're still thinking, well, is it even about the manager? Likelihood it is going to be about the manager, but there wasn't any confirmation that it would be. Then as a few hours went by, it came apparent that it was going to be Gary Monk. And there we are. He was appointed on Friday afternoon, sat alongside the owner, Depon Chancery. It was unveiled to the media. And he's the new man to lead Wednesday forward. But a bit of a bolt from the blue, as you say. But quite a sensible choice, I would say, from the managers that are available out of work at the moment.
He definitely is a more of a Chancery appointment than Danny Cowley, because he's always tended to opt for experienced Chancery rather than someone up and coming like Cowley. You look at Carvajal, he's got a great record in Europe. Jos Luhukay got promotions on his CV in Germany. Steve Bruce, obviously, four-time promotion winner from the Championship. And Gary Monk, again, whilst he's not got a promotion on his CV, he's probably, alongside Gary Rowett, the most experienced Championship option Wednesday could have gone for, bar Chris Hughton, which we know was probably their first choice. So, George, what do you make of the appointment then? Are you happy? Do you think it's a good choice? And what do you think is a realistic achievement for him and Wednesday potentially this season?
Well, I'll be honest, when the news first came out and I'd seen that Gary Monk was set to be installed as the new boss, I was a little bit unsure what to make of it, because I thought, it's not the most glamorous of appointments.
It's not a sexy appointment, is it?
No, it's not. When, obviously, Danny Cowley was considered to be the one that everyone wanted, with the up-and-coming quality that he delivered at Lincoln, and everyone thought it was going to be him. But Monk, As I say, a few hours went by, I started doing some more research on him and looking back on what he'd done so far, and I thought to myself, this might not actually be a bad move after all. His record isn't that bad. I know he's not achieved anything in terms of promotions, but he got Leeds so close to the playoffs in 2016-17. He transformed Birmingham. The Birmingham fans have seen nothing but praise for him and what he achieved in his time there. Middlesbrough, quite hard to judge because it only lasted about 6 months. It was very, very premature, that one. It's quite strange how he was obviously left Middlesbrough the night they'd beaten Wednesday, I remember, and then Carlos Carvalhal went the day after.
Yep.
And there was obviously the sudden talk, oh, Gary Monk's going to be the one to replace Carlos, and obviously that didn't happen. But being honest, I think Monk is a sensible choice. He's only 40 years old, so he's got his best years in management ahead of him. And to be fair, he's not done a bad job where he's been, because Leeds, to be fair, they only missed out on the playoffs by 5 points that season.
Yeah, I'm sort of on the line. If this appointment had happened 8 weeks ago, I think I'd have been really excited by it, because I've actually really genuinely always rated Gary Monk. I've got Connor, who's a big Birmingham City fan, he'll pay testament to this. I've always rated Gary Monk. I was always praising him when he was at Blues. I think he's every single club he's been at, bar Middlesbrough, I would say he's improved them. Before leaving Swansea City, I think he led them to an 8th place finish in the Championship when he took over after in the Premier League, after Laudrup left, and then he obviously left that post. But Middlesbrough was the only real one that he didn't improve them. Although I still think, and I thought at the time, that he was harshly sacked. I think they were just outside the playoffs when they obviously beat Wednesday, as George has just alluded to. I was at the match. I remember. Monk getting sacked that evening. Carlos went the day after, as George has rightly said. It was Christmas Eve. It was when Carlos went. It was the 23rd. So I always thought it was slightly harshly sacked, because as we've seen, it's not easy to change the fortunes of a team that have got relegated and instantly make them promotion favourites. It's not an easy task. I thought he was beginning to do that. I thought Middlesbrough played very well on that day, for example, but ultimately with the money he'd spent, you could argue he should have done better. Leeds, he did a great job. I thought it was very much a shock that he left. He sort of fell out with the owners, from what I gather. We'll obviously get Tom's thoughts on that. He'll know much better than me. But again, Birmingham, fantastic job. He no doubt improved them. I think they were bottom of the table when he took over. And last Christmas, I think in 12 months from when he took over to then, he got them to something like 8th. Then obviously they dropped off a little bit. Point deduction came in. But he did a fantastic job there. So every club he's been at, bar Middlesbrough, I would say is improved. The only thing for me is, why, if Gary Monk was obviously never the first choice option. Chris Hughton was the first choice option. So it's a bit frustrating that he's been sat there for 8 weeks and Wednesday haven't made a move for him. I suppose Chancery clearly thought that Bullen might have been capable of stepping up to the plate. I think it's the right decision not to give Lee Bullen the job. I think after the 6 games that Wednesday have had, to only have 9 points is quite poor, to be honest. It's a very mediocre start to the season, especially after all the optimism from back-to-back wins in the opening 2 games, and more importantly, the performance against Barnsley. From what I understand, the QPR game, I was working, so I wasn't there. It was one of the worst performances, never mind results, of the season for some time, harping back to the Jos Lehukai era. So I'm a bit middle of the road with it, because I think if it happened 8 weeks ago, I'd have been much more excited than I am now. But by the same token, his record's very good. Like I say, I rate him quite a lot. I think he's done well everywhere he's been, but it's just, I don't know, there's something missing for me to be genuinely really excited. And I think that's a feeling that a lot of Wednesday fans are feeling right now. When you look at the cold hard facts, it's a good appointment. It's a decent appointment. There's nothing really bad to say about him. The only thing that is against his name, which we're going to touch on now, is obviously the fact that he's managed 5 Championship clubs in 5 years, and that's where you come in, Tom. So obviously he spent a year at Elland Road with Leeds, relatively successful finish, leading them to 7th in 2016-17, but unexpectedly didn't see eye to eye with the owners, and suddenly he's gone. So do you think Wednesday fans should be concerned about that?
It's a really strange one with Gary Monk, because he's certainly a manager I've got quite mixed opinions on, really, because although I joke about it and stuff, and I said a few things when he was given the Wednesday job to you, knowing that you were a Wednesday fan, he's not a manager whose credentials and managerial ability, I think, are a massive concern, because I actually think he's a decent manager. I mean, when he came into Leeds, we'd had years of stagnation. He was the one that sort of revitalised that Leeds side that had stuttered for years. And he was really the catalyst for the upturn in fortunes, really, since Monk, barring the one season where we started with Thomas Christensen as manager. Things have got better based on what he did. I mean, some of the players he brought in, not just signings, but players that he really brought into the first team fold as well, are still key players for us today. I mean, he was the one that gave Calvin Phillips a regular starting berth in the team. He was the one that signed us players like Luke Kaelin. And he's a decent manager. The only fault for me in Monk's management, talking strictly about football and on the pitch affairs, from what I saw at Leeds, is that he didn't seem to have much of a plan B. And his Leeds side was certainly found out towards the end of the 2016-17 season. And he didn't really seem to know how to switch things up when teams figured out his philosophy and figured out how to deal with the approach that he took. But away from affairs on the pitch, for me, it's Monk's character that I question. For me, and this is obviously strictly just my opinion, he doesn't seem to really have any genuine connection with the clubs that he manages. He speaks in cliches, which you and George will find out very soon. Certainly. I mean, it's so frustrating when the losses come and he sort of repeatedly says, oh, the group will bounce back stronger. And it's very frustrating. But the main concern regarding Monk for me has to be the revelations that came out a while ago that seem to be honest, have been swept under the carpet a little bit recently, probably overshadowed by the news of his new club and everything. But, I mean, three of his former clubs now, so you've got Leeds, Middlesbrough, Birmingham, have all said that he didn't protect financial interests of the club, which goes back to the point I made that he doesn't really have much of a genuine connection with the clubs he manages. And I know people say, oh, well, the cliches, they're just part of it, of his persona. But for me, that's another bit of evidence as to suggest that he doesn't have that genuine connection. And to be honest, if I was a Wednesday fan, I'd be slightly concerned because, A, I don't want Danny Cowley to get the job. I think he'd have been perfect for Wednesday. But I think the revelations that came out a couple of months ago would be setting off some alarm bells in my head because, I mean, is he going to carry on doing the things he did? I mean, it was documented at Leeds that in the season he were manager, he signed Mo Barrow on loan from Swansea at the time, and that was strictly through a deal with his agent. Obviously, at Middlesbrough, there were a couple of players, Cyrus Christie being one of them, who was signed under a cloud because of his agent's involvement. And I just, for me, that would make me be very worried about Monk's character and whether he's the right person to lead Wednesday. And to be honest, I mean, when the revelations came out, I thought it had put a real question mark over his future in management. And that's not been the case, but I'd certainly be worried.
Well, I think it's very much a case of innocent until proven guilty. Those allegations are obviously quashed by Monk. I know he was asked about it at the press conference on Friday, but he was very much wanting to talk about Wednesday. He said he will discuss what has gone on and other things surrounding that issue later on down the line, but obviously it wasn't one for right now, that was what he said. In terms of, he'll obviously be held by a confidentiality agreement, so we don't know when we might find out a little bit more about what's gone on, but clearly, Chancery will have done some research and done his background checks, I would imagine. He's a very smart guy. He's not someone that jumps in straight away, as we've seen by the fact it's taken 8 weeks to appoint Gary Monk. He's not someone that's just going to go hell for leather and just, you know, bugger the consequences. He's going to take his time to make the right decision. He took a while to get Jos Lehoucai in. He took a while to get Steve Bruce in. So he has taken his time every time when replacing a manager. So it's difficult to really comment on that, given how little we really know about it. But I think realistically that it's a decent appointment, as I've said, for what's out there at the minute. If you're looking for experience, it was him or Rowett, really, other than Chris Hughton. So I think there's a fair bit of I think most Wednesday fans are feeling optimistic, but not thrilled, and I think it's not a sexy appointment, as we said, but it could be one again that sees Wednesday improve, and that it's those fine margins which will determine if Wednesday get in the playoffs or whether they just miss out. So, you know, that extra 5% that he seems to bring to teams could be the catalyst to see them just nip in that sixth spot or around.
Yeah, sorry, just to jump in as well, just mentioning the off the pitch stuff, it might very much go the other way for Wednesday. He might have that much of a desire to put that chapter behind him that he sort of he goes the complete other way and acts completely different to how he allegedly did before. And it might not end up being a problem for Wednesday. I just think it's something that needs to be kept in the back of the mind, not just because of the alleged dodginess of it. Is dodginess a word? I'm going to go with it anyway.
Yeah, we'll go with it anyway.
Yeah, we'll go with it. It's just, for me, the main thing is the connection, because it very much felt like when he was at Leeds that he seemed to have a great relationship with the fans. I mean, you know what the fans are like at Elland Road. They admired him a lot. And I remember the last game of the season, I'm pretty sure it was against Wigan, and there was such support for him on the last day. And then, obviously, he left under a bit of a cloud. And then if you look back at the statements that he's made after leaving Leeds, Middlesbrough, Birmingham, for me, and maybe I'm letting my stance as a Leeds supporter overtake my opinion here, but it just seems to be very emotionless. And for me, I guess it's quite a traditional view that I like, and I know football's changing, but I like the manager and a player for my club to have a genuine affection and desire to be there. And that's the main reason I have question marks over his character.
Yeah, I think the thing that's in Wednesday's favour is the fact that he now has a little bit of a point to prove, definitely. He did well at Birmingham, but if he wants to be seen as a top, top-end championship manager, he's got to get a promotion on his CV at this point. He's not finished in the top six yet, and he's not stayed at a club really long enough to build a legacy. So now is the chance. So whilst it's good for Wednesday, I also think he should be hungry, and he seems to be, to go and really make a mark and for his own career's sake. Because as you say, these allegations haven't helped. He obviously did really well at Birmingham, but it was never a promotion task. It was stabilising the club after the whole Harry Redknapp saga. So now he's got an opportunity with a club that, if he's a really good manager, Wednesday have got the building blocks, the foundations to be turned into promotion contenders. But by the same token, they're probably just slightly above mid-table team at the minute. So that's where his coaching and his management will really come into play. And that's where we'll see. And again, at he's a good age at 40. So he's got a lot to prove. So I think it could be a decent match. And across Yorkshire, Lincoln City boss Danny Cowley looks set to be appointed imminently as the new Huddersfield Town manager. It's been a bit of an ongoing saga. We've sort of touched on it a little bit, but he confirmed in midweek that the two clubs had reached a compensation package, but it seemed he was going to stay at Lincoln. Further complicated by the intense speculation that Wednesday were after him. Then obviously Wednesday have appointed Gary Monk, and now Danny Cowley looks like he's going to go to Huddersfield. So it does make you wonder a little bit whether he was holding out for Wednesday or what's gone on, but he's done a U-turn anyway. So Tom, Danny Cowley's stock's really high at the moment, obviously, but given the state Huddersfield find themselves in, do you see it as a coup for Huddersfield, or do you think it's a risk for not going for someone more experienced given the current downward trajectory that the club find themselves in?
No, I certainly see it as a coup, to be honest. I think he would be the right choice for Huddersfield. I think he'd be a breath of fresh air, really, in a club that is in dire need of it. I think a losing mentality is quite obvious within Huddersfield's squad at the moment. And I think just a completely new approach with new ideas is the best way to go about changing that. I mean, you saw it when David Wagner took over as Huddersfield manager. They were a club that was stagnating and there wasn't a winning mentality or much ambition other than a target of keeping the Reds above water and avoiding relegation. And obviously, Wagner came in and changed that. And I think Cowley could do the same this time round. He's one of the best young managers in the English game. He's cut his teeth at the bottom and he's achieved more than any Lincoln fan could have hoped for in his time there. And I think he's earned the opportunity to manage higher up the pyramid at this point. And I think, for me, he's the best option available to the club, because regardless of how much experience you've got as a manager, I think when you walk into a club that it has quite a messy situation, which is obviously the case at Huddersfield at the moment, I almost think experience goes out the window sometimes, because it's just all about your approach and the ideas that you bring to that club. And going back to Cowley, I think it's a difficult one, because regardless of his ability, it will be a huge challenge for him. But because he's going to have to change the whole mentality within the squad, and he doesn't have much time to do it. You're not afforded that time in the Championship. But if he can turn things around at Huddersfield, then it'll be adding to his reputation significantly. And a lot of people I've seen on Twitter and stuff can't see why he's taking this job on. And yeah, it's a challenge, but if you want to push on and advance in your managerial career, you can't sit around and wait for jobs that look straightforward, because the best managers, in my opinion, are moulded by challenging scenarios, and taking this job on, for me, says a lot about his character. And I don't think it's completely risk-free, because he might not be able to turn things around, but I don't think his lack of experience, if you like, will go against him, because although he's not managed at this level before, he has got the experience of turning the club around. Obviously, look at what he did with Lincoln. They were relegated to non-league and were in a difficult position. And he went into that club, was the breath of fresh air, and now they're in a brilliant position. And that's why I think he could be a great appointment for Huddersfield.
Why if like you say, you can't just wait for the right job to come around? Why did he turn down West Brom in the summer then? Why would he go to Huddersfield, who are in such a perilous position, when he's turned down other bigger jobs in the summer?
I think, well, it is a difficult one. Obviously, I don't know his reasoning, but I think there's a lot of factors that can be brought into it. Sometimes it could be anything from family reasons, logistics, or maybe he's just got to a point with Lincoln where he feels like it's time to move on. It could be a lot of reasons. Maybe he wanted to safeguard Lincoln's immediate future by setting them off, starting the season off with them, and hopefully getting a good run of form before moving on. And maybe he just thought this was the time. Obviously, I don't know his exact reasoning, but I think it's a good appointment, and I think it's a challenge for him that if he can achieve good things with Huddersfield and turn them around, it'll set him up for an excellent managerial career.
George, it feels like we were here sort of Christmas time saying very similar things about another up-and-coming League One manager in Nathan Jones, and how good an appointment it was for him to join Stoke City. Obviously, that's really not gone to plan, and it just sort of underlines how difficult it can be to come in and change the mindset of a group of players. And very much the same feeling as people saying, oh, Danny Cowley's a fantastic appointment for Huddersfield, it'll work out brilliantly. We were saying the same thing about Nathan Jones. So do you think there's a similar risk here, or is Cowley definitely the right man?
Well, I might be a little bit old school here, but I just take the viewpoint that every managerial appointment is a gamble, regardless of who it is or what club it is. Of course, there's no guarantees that it's going to bring success for whoever you bring in. But I think Danny Cowley going to Huddersfield, obviously it's a big step up from Lincoln, League One football to the Championship. The gap's just got bigger and bigger as each year goes by. But it's not just a case of going into that football club and starting to hit the ground running. For me, he has got a whole rebuilding job to do. He's got a big squad of players who, personally, I think, may have the attitude of, we're too good for the Championship, having played in the Premier League. And clearly that isn't the case where they are after the first six games. But Danny Cowley's obviously got some quality about him. I don't know an awful lot about him, so I won't lie, but I think he is one of the brightest upcoming stars in the English game, and it's often said these days about how English managers don't get enough of an opportunity. But going back to Nathan Jones, obviously his time at Stoke so far, however much longer it may go on for, hasn't proven to be successful. But for every failure, you can look at the success stories of, say, Chris Wilder at Sheffield United. He was working in the lower reaches of English football. Oxford, Northampton, worked his way up. Dean Smith as well was at Walsall, went to Brentford, went to Villa. Now he's in the Premier League. So there is always the possibility that it might go this way or that way in terms of success or failure. But I think Cowley is quite brave for taking this challenge on, because it's not going to be an easy job that he can fix within a few weeks. It's probably, for me, going to take two or three seasons to get Huddersfield's house in order again.
Yeah.
And I remember at the start of the season how I said that I thought Huddersfield would struggle to get into the top half of the table.
I knew that was going to come back out at some point.
Based on the evidence we've seen so far, it might be a possibility. But as I say, just to wrap it up, Danny Cowley is definitely an upcoming manager. And people say it's a risk in trying it in the Championship. But at the end of the day, I was going to know if he never takes it on.
Yeah, I see that. Just to be clear, I very much think that Danny Cowley is a great appointment. I just thought I'd play devil's advocate, as I like to do. Because obviously there are some similarities between Nathan Jones going to Stoke and Cowley going to Huddersfield. So it would be wrong to not point that out. But I do think it's a good appointment for them. I'm a little bit surprised that he's chosen to go now and go to Huddersfield, because they're doing really well, Lincoln, and there's a very good chance that they could finish in the playoffs or even automatic promotion, but more likely the top six in League One. And Huddersfield, obviously, we've seen the pitfalls of going into a newly or a freshly relegated Premier League club to the Championship, so it's not an easy job. I'm just a bit surprised because, like I say, we know there was offers from West Brom in the summer. I know that Hull City were very interested in him as well, although granted that West Brom and Huddersfield are much better jobs than Hull, not comparing the two for a second, but clearly by the fact that he was interested, it seems, in Wednesday's interest in him, that he thinks it was the right time to move on, and he certainly earned the chance to have a go in the Championship. I just think his stock was that high at the minute that I'm a little bit surprised that he's chosen Huddersfield as the place to go in. But as Tom's rightly pointed out, managers are often judged by their ability in less than ideal scenarios and environments, and that'll certainly be the case when he first walks through the door at the John Smith Stadium. So it'll really will prove him. If he makes a success of Huddersfield in the situation they're in at the minute, his stock's only going to rise and rise, and I think Tom's spot on with that point. Just looking at some of the action, some actual games that went on before the Championship, because obviously we didn't have a podcast last week, want to talk about Brentford, because before the international break, they produced one of the biggest results of the weekend, beating Derby County 3-0 at Griffin Park. Obviously, they were 3-0 up before half-time in that match. A really dominant display from the Bees, and it's fair to say that's the best performance of the season so far from them. George, a lot of people tipped Brentford for the top six at the start of the season, some even for automatic promotion, although I had my little rant and said there's no way they'll get top two. Looking to prove right. If George is going to start going, I said this, I'm going to start doing it as well. So Brentford's not been the strongest start from then. Relatively slow, 7 points from six games. But on Saturday, or a couple of last Saturday, do you think that was the sign of them just starting to click into gear with, obviously, the quality that we know they did bring in throughout the summer?
Well, I think it was always going to be hard to predict Brentford's season once Neil Maupay left, because obviously he was such a big source of goals in their side last season. Obviously, it was a huge player to lose, but it's not been the best of starts. Two wins from the first six, just 7 points on the table. We're speaking about the win over Derby that may perhaps, you never know, a statement of intent, but based on the way that Derby have started, is it that big of a shock? Possibly not. But if Brentford can click into gear now and get that win prior to the international break, give them a confidence booster that they will have had last week and this week, ahead of the Championship resuming this weekend, they're probably going to be in pretty confident mood. But I still think it's very early days for teams like that to predict how they're going to come May. But I think Brentford will be a team that will probably be competing, I would say, between, I don't know, 6th and maybe 12th. I think they're in that category.
There's a few teams in that category, aren't there?
Yeah, that could push into the top 6, but might be a bridge too far. I just think it's going to be interesting to see how they get the goals without Maupay.
Well, you talk about the goals, and obviously one of the main sources of the goals since Maupay left has been Ollie Watkins, who's moved into a more central number 9 role this season, which is where, obviously, he flourished at Exeter City. He's been playing on the left-hand side since moving to Griffin Park with Maupay down the middle, but now he's been given the responsibility to lead the line in what is a very fluid front three. So obviously starts in the middle, but drift to the right, drift to the left, and cause problems. He's got 4 goals already this season, and in this new position, albeit again fluid front three, can move around a lot. Do you think, Tom, that this is going to get the best from him?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, it seems to be he's flourished there in recent weeks, and Brentford seem to get the best out of him when he's playing that central role. I mean, I was at the Leeds United game against Brentford the other week, and although Brentford lost 1-0 in that game, I was quite impressed by Brentford, really. I mean, I'm not just saying how great Leeds are, but obviously Leeds are a very good side, and Brentford did a really, really good job of frustrating them for 80, 81, 82 minutes, whatever minute it was when Nketiah scored the winner. And I thought for a team that's undergone a lot of big personnel changes, and although it wasn't a massive turnaround in the case of they didn't sign 15 players and get rid of 15, but they changed personnel in key positions. Obviously, you've got a new goalkeeper in, you've got a new centre-half and captain in Pontus Janssen. And I think it was always going to take a little bit of time for Brentford to click and gel as a team this season, because there were big changes in big, important positions for them. But I saw at the Leeds game that there were signs there that they're going to click. They play good football when they're in possession. When they've not got the ball, they regroup quickly and then they get into a solid shape. And I think the win against Derby at the weekend, although Derby are a team that are in form, in fact, they're far from that, they're doing really poorly. I think Saturday, well, I will predict now that Saturday is the start of a good run of form for Brentford, because I think it is starting to click for them, for a team that had such big change in the summer. And obviously you mentioned that fluid front three of Watkins, Benrahma and Bueno. It's really starting to look dangerous. And obviously Ollie Watkins is one of the most creative and talented, technically talented players in the Championship, and he's flourishing in that central role. And I think it's going to be an exciting few weeks and months for Brentford. And I stick to my prediction that I think they'll be in the top six this season.
Early shout from Tom, that's what we like. I like bold predictions like that as we go along. They're obviously playing Preston, I think it is, the weekend. Yeah, Preston, and then they've got Stoke and Barnsley and Bristol City. So those four fixtures are certainly the first three that I've mentioned of those four are games that if they are going to go on a little bit of a run, you're targeting 7 points from Preston away, Stoke at home and Barnsley away. You're probably targeting at least 7 points if you then want to kickstart and be hitting that sort of playoff form. I think that Brentford, it's an interesting one. I just feel like I'm more leaning on George's side of the fence than yours, if I'm being honest. I think it might be a bridge too far from just because of the amount of changes they've done, and they've not actually really improved the squad. They've just sort of replaced like for like. There's a couple of little ones, but you think they also lost like Chris Metham in January last season, which never got replaced. Konsa went, so Janssen and Pinnock have come in. Romain Sawyers has gone, they brought Jensen in. Maupai's gone, and they've got Bueno to sort of fill that gap with Watkins moving central, as we said. Keeping hold of Benrahma's a big one, but I worry about their away form. I know it was certainly the thing that did them last season. I think they had the fourth best home form last season in the league, and obviously like bottom three away from home. They have already got an away win this season against Middlesbrough, which is promising, but a loss to Leeds and a loss to Charlton away as well already. Their away form is the thing that makes me think they'll be a step too far for them. But good result against Derby. There will be a match for anyone at home, especially with the fluidity of that front three. So it'll be interesting to see if they can swing a couple of results. If they get something at Preston, certainly if they don't lose, if they can get a point or a win, then that would be a big turning point for me, because A, it's away from home. Preston's a really tough place to go. And it would just signify back-to-back wins as well for the first time this season. Just to round off our weekend analysis, we're going to look at West Brom, who've obviously made a strong start to life under Slaven Bilic. The Baggies have got 12 points after six games, and alongside Swansea, City and Charlton, they are one of only three teams unbeaten in the Championship after six matches. Tom, they've had some minor tweaks in the summer, and I know you had them as your favourites to win the league. Added Kenneth Zahor, Charlie Austin in attack. Ajayi bolstered them at centre-half, and Romain Sawyers in midfield. What have you made for the starts of your potential champions?
I've been really impressed, and I don't think they've shown anything that's altered my mind in terms of my prediction. I think for a new manager, start with a six-game unbeaten run is excellent. And obviously they conceded some sloppy goals against Blackburn, but I'd back Slaven Bilic to address that problem. And I think Hegazi will strengthen them when he returns.
I disagree. I said I disagree. Not a Hegazi fan at all. I think he's rubbish, personally. I haven't yet to see what anything about him. A lot of people rate him, and I just don't get it. Whenever I've seen him, I think he's looked haphazardous. It looks like he's about to make a mistake.
Yeah, no, I think he's good, to be fair. Although saying that, I really rated Kyle Bartley. And when West Brom signed Kyle Bartley, I thought they've gone and signed the best centre-half in the league, because when he was on loan at Leeds from Swansea...
He had a great season,
he were unbelievable. I thought he were better than Janssen that season. And then things really fell away for him. And I know we had a few injuries and stuff, but... Yeah, but anyway, I like Hegazi. And I actually don't think we've seen the best of them yet. I think Charlie Austin was obviously their big marquee signing in the summer, a player who's proven himself in the Premier League. And I don't think he's reached full fitness yet. I don't think he's quite got up and running And to be honest, I really can't see West Brom struggling this season. I think they'll stay up at the top end. Obviously, they're not going to go the entire season unbeaten. But I think certainly Bilic can address these defensive problems that they've... I say problems. They've been a little bit sloppy in the early stages of the season, which, to be honest, happens to a lot of teams. A lot of teams don't start the season completely defensively solid. But I've got faith in Bilic to tweak those little problems. And I'm still pretty confident in my prediction of West Brom winning the title, although I would love to see Leeds leapfrog them and win that title.
It's an interesting one because they did have to make a lot of changes throughout the summer, losing Dwight Gayle and Jay Rodriguez in attack, obviously. Charlie Austin, we spoke about when he signed. I think it's a great addition. The highest pedigree championship striker in the division at the minute for me. Again, when he gets up and running fitness-wise, which is the only potential blotch you can put against his name, he will bang goals in for fun. The thing I think they've got a little bit different this season is they've got a little bit more pace in wide areas, and I think Diagnaro, who's coming from West Ham, he's made a really positive impact out wide. They've also got Edwards, the young lad who scored on the opening day against Nottingham Forest, and I think they've got a little bit more pace in wide areas. Obviously, Matt Phillips on the other side as well. I know Jacob Murphy they had last season, but he didn't really do too much for them, but they seem to just have a bit more... They're a bit more dynamic in attack, I would argue, and I'm really starting to fall in love with Romain Sawyers, I have to say. I thought he was very good last season, but every time I've watched him play for West Brom, he's been the best player on the pitch, and I think he's one of the best central midfielders. Deeper, certainly, because obviously he used to play a bit out wide, a little bit at number 10, but now in this deeper, more deep-lying playmaker role in a two with Livermore, I think he's one of the best ball-playing midfielders in the Championship. Very similar to Barry Bannon in the way he operates in the Sheffield Wednesday team, for example. But I think he's one of the best in the Championship. I would love him in any Championship team. I think he walks into most teams. You think the best teams, likes of Leeds. I think he's better than Adam Forshaw. West Brom, obviously, he's playing for. Fulham, maybe not. Fulham, maybe he could play with Arter and Kearney as a midfield three, but... I think he's fantastic. I think he's one of the best in the league. Diagnara, as I said, I think he's come in and made a real impact. But yet again, the main question mark about West Brom is they can't defend. It was last season it was their Achilles heel, and this season they're yet to keep a clean sheet in all competitions. Of the top six, only Bristol City have conceded more than their tally of seven. And George, do you think that's a concern and that could once again derail their hopes of automatic promotion and turn them from real top two contenders into a team you can't really trust and will finish in the top six?
I'm sure it will be a slight concern to Slaven Bilic, but if you're scoring goals at the other end and winning games, then you're not going to be overly bothered. Of course, you want to get clean sheets. Everyone wants to every week, but in the Championship, we know that's not going to happen. But I think West Brom have got the quality enough in the attacking ranks to be up there this season. Obviously, Jay Rodriguez and Dwight Gayle losing them over the summer was a big blow because they obviously contributed so many goals last season between them. But as you've already said, Elliot, Charlie Austin, once he's up and running, up to full fitness and can get back to what he does best, he will be a difficult man to stop at this level. We know that. He did it at Burnley for so long. But defensively, it is a little worry. But I think Semi Ajayi, I'm not sure if he's playing in the back four for West Brom or just in front of the back four. He's
played at centre-half this season.
Played at centre-half. Well, he's going to obviously add the quality, but I think it's important to remember that he's probably learning to play alongside his new centre-back partner. It's going to take time for them to adapt and play off of each other. But I think overall, I think West Brom have definitely got the quality this season to be up there. And dare I say it, I think they will finish in the top two. Because when Bilic got appointed back in the summer, I thought to myself, this is a very good move for West Brom. They've got themselves a damn good manager there. And I really do think West Brom will go up this season.
I still have question marks over the back line. I agree that it's a new partnership with Ajayi and Bartley and Hegazi to come back in. It'll be interesting to see how he slots in or doesn't, which would be a bold move. But I don't know, for top two, I just think you've got to be getting clean sheets. And I know that goals win you games, but I think to get automatic promotion, you've got to be keeping clean sheets and you've got to be tight, because you are going to have games where you just can't find the breakthrough. And if you're not leaking goals, then you can nick games 1-0, 2-1. But for top two, I think they've got to improve their defensive record personally. Although I think if they do that, I think they've got all the capabilities and credentials of a top two side. But I'm yet to see a top two team go up and be as bad defensively as they are and were last season. So it's not just like a little bit of adjustment under Bilic. For the last 18 months or so, West Brom have not been good at defending in the Championship. So I'm not sure they will get top two until they address those defensive frailties personally. But the rest of the squad seems ready-made. Top manager as well, as you two have both alluded to. So they just need to get that balance right, and they might have a good chance. That noise means it's time for our weekly quiz, and once again, back again with the fun. This is part of the show where we put our pundits' knowledge to the test with a five-question showdown. As always, I'll give you four options, and you have to tell me which one is correct. If the scores are level, we'll go to a tiebreak, where the first person to give me the correct answer wins. We went to a tiebreak last time this went on, our last quiz, which was good fun. Are you two ready?
Yep. Of course.
Ready as always. You sound more optimistic than normal, Tom. Usually you're downbeat about these quizzes.
I told myself before today that I wouldn't whinge about it, so I'm being good.
You are. You've been well behaved. I like it. A much more positive attitude. Right, so question number one. I want to know which team has had the most shots this season. Is it A, West Brom, B, Cardiff City, C, Leeds United, or D, Queen's Park Rangers? And we'll start with you, Tom, seeing as you're being so well behaved.
I'm going to go Leeds.
George?
I'll go Leeds as well.
Ah, good start for both of you, both on the board. Leeds United have had the most shots in the Championship this season. 106, to be exact. West Brom second with 99. So a good start for both of you. One all after one question. Which player has created the most chances in the Championship so far this season? Is it A, Matthias Klick, B, John Swift, C, Stuart Downing, or D, Barry Bannon? Start with you, George.
I'm going to stick with the Leeds trend, and I'm going to go Matthias Klick.
Tom?
I'm going to go Barry Bannon.
You're both wrong, actually. It's John Swift of Reading. He's had a very good start to the season, Swift for Reading. Playing more regularly. He's shaken off some injury concerns that he's had over the last 18 months or so, and he's doing well. He's created 23 chances this season. Matthias Klick was second with 17, and Downing and Bannon were third and fourth in the order. So that's still one all, one right, one wrong for both of you. I want to know who has made the most successful passes in the opposition's half this season. Is it A, Romain Sawyers, B, Pablo Hernandez, C, Matt Grimes, or D, Tom Kearney? Starting with you, Tom.
I'm going to say Sawyers.
George?
For the way that they play, I'm going to take a punt on Matt Grimes.
I think all four of these could realistically be the answer, but obviously they're not. And the answer is Romain Sawyers with 214.
Yes.
I thought it might be Pablo originally. All four of those are realistic. Like, they all play in sort of more of advanced midfield areas. So none of them were obviously not correct. But yeah, 214 for Romain Sawyers this season, which shows how he's making West Brom tick in the final third. Another reason why I love him. Question number four. So we're at 2-1 to Tom. This is one that I wrote an article on over the last week, which I found really interesting data-wise. So, comparing the average home attendances against stadium capacity, I want to know which club has the highest percentage of their stadium filled this season. So, does that make sense? So, in terms of attendances versus how much it holds as a percentage. So, is it A, Middlesbrough, B, Leeds United, C, Nottingham Forest, or D, Luton Town? And we're starting with you, George.
Well, I did actually read this piece that you put out, and I'm just hoping for the life of me I can actually remember what it said. I'm pretty sure it was Luton.
Tom?
Yeah, I'm going to say Luton as well, because I think the other three are almost two obvious choices. Now, obviously, no Kenilworth Road's quite a small ground, but yeah, I'm going to go Luton as well.
George, you weren't very smart there. You should have led him off the scent. You've kind of told him that it was the right answer, and I didn't think... It's nice to know people are actually clicking on my articles, but I didn't expect you to have read it, and I didn't expect you to then make it abundantly obvious what the correct answer was. It is Luton Town with 98.3%, because as you say, Kenilworth Road's quite small and compact, but with Luton back in the Championship, it's been well filled on every occasion. Leeds was second at 93%, Forest were third, and I don't know why I put Middlesbrough in, they were nowhere near. I just put them in for a laugh. So we're at 3-2 now after four questions each. So George, you need to get this one. If you know the answer, it's probably not a good idea to tell it Tom this time. So you need to get this one and hope Tom doesn't, and we'll head to a tie break. I want to know, as question number five, which club has committed the highest number of fouls this season? Is it A, Hull City, B, Sheffield Wednesday, C, Huddersfield Town, or D, Preston North End? And we're on George. No, we're not. We're on Tom even. I can't count.
I'm going to say Preston North End.
George?
These are actually really hard.
Thank you. I do my research. I spend a good half an hour building these quizzes before we start.
Shifting through the stats.
Yep.
I'm going to go with Hull. I don't know. Take a guess.
You're both wrong, so that means that Tom wins the quiz 3-2 this week. The point scoring's getting higher, we'll also point out. We're getting less 1-0s. It's actually Wednesday. 100 fouls Sheffield Wednesday have completed this season. So that's a bit of a surprise to me. Having seen a fair few games, 100 fouls for Wednesday. So Tom takes this week's quiz. You'll never guess who's the lowest, by the way, who's committed the fewest amount of fouls this season. It's Millwall. I know, that really surprised me as well. 63, I think it was, if memory serves me correctly. They've committed 63 fouls, but Wednesday are up at 100. So that surprised me anyways. But Tom is the winner of this week's quiz. Congratulations, Tom. See what a positive attitude does.
Yeah, thanks. But what my question is, when are we getting prizes?
We're working on it. We've applied for funding for prizes, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
I'm in Sheffield soon. I want a pint.
Yeah, we can do that. I think we can sort
that. T-shirt.
We should start doing some merchandise or something.
Line up the shelves.
Yeah.
Championship chat mug or pencil case.
You can customize your own phone cases as well with your favorite pundit.
Pick a face to have on it. You can either have my face, George's, Elliot's, or then you've got like Johnny's face, Matt's face. There's all sorts of ones as well.
Exactly. Lots to pick from. Coming soon to an online store near you. anyway, yeah, we'll sort you out a pint. I think we can just about stretch to that in the budget. So we're going to look at our big match previews now. Looking ahead to some cracking games that are going to take place this weekend. Although, after a week off, every single game looks like a cracker because the international break is boring, as we all know. So we're going to take a look at Friday night's big clash between Derby County against Cardiff City, first of all. Cardiff seem to be always playing on a Friday recently. Obviously played Fulham last time. We had a round of fixtures in the Championship. Derby, we spoke about, really not in good form. Got thumped 3-0 by Brentford. On the last game that they played. Obviously, they drew with West Brom in their last home game as well. It's not been a great start for Philip Cocu at Pride Park. A lot of the positives around Derby last season was their home form. That's what got them into the playoffs. Not started great. I don't think they've won. I think they've drawn all three of their home games so far this season. I am correct in saying that is right. So they've drawn all three of their home games, yet to get a home win, which is going to be vital. Playing Cardiff City, who have been rubbish away from home, but very good at home. So, two teams that can't win away or can't win at home. So, this should be an interesting one. Tom, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I think obviously it is a match between two teams whose styles this season really haven't paid dividends for them. I can see it being a bit of a scrap, to be honest. I think it'll boil down to winning individual battles. And I think there'll certainly be a lot of pressure on Waghorn, Marriott, or both, whoever plays, to get the better of Morrison and Flint, because there's been such little threat from Derby in other areas of the pitch. I think there is a lot of problems at Derby. For me, there just doesn't seem to be any width with them whatsoever. I mean, they started the season with the four 4-2-3-1 and relying on the fullbacks to provide the width, because the players in behind the in the strikers, they play so narrow. And now he's moved into a 4-3-3 as Cocu, and there still doesn't seem to be that width, because the front three, you've got Lawrence, Waghorn and Marriott, none of which are what you'd call out-and-out wingers. And I just think it's a real problem for Derby. And to be honest, and I hate to do this, and I apologise, but I'm going to go 0-0.
Oh, you're going for 0-0. I thought you were going to just say you were going for a draw, but 0-0 is even worse, so...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, we'll let you off since you won the quiz. I agree with you. I on the last time that we spoke about Derby in the podcast, I said that they should try back three when they've got everyone fit, given their lack of natural wingers. I always think Tom Lawrence is better in number 10, as I said. It also allows you to play Waghorn and Marriott as a strike partnership. So I think they should look at a back three. They've really missed having Jaden Bogle injured, because they don't have another right back, really, other than Wisdom. But I think he's injured as well, or he's certainly out of... He's out of favour, if not, because he's not been playing. They've been playing Max Lowe. Yeah, they've been playing Max Lowe at right back, who's obviously left-footed and a left back, and it's just even more so, you know, constrained them into the centre of the pitch. So they're desperate for width. So when they've got the likes of Jaden Bogle back, I think a back three would be a good way to combat that. I just have a feeling, and I don't know why, and I'm similar to what George had before the international break when he said that Swansea were going to beat Leeds. I just think Derby are going to win, and I don't know why. I just feel like this might be a bit of a, not a turning point, but because I don't think they will finish in the top six this season, Derby. But I'm going to back Derby because I don't really know why, to be honest. I just have a nagging feeling that they're going to edge it. So I'm going to go for a 2-1 Derby County win based on very little in terms of analysis or reasoning, just a hunch. So I'm going for a 2-1 Derby win, George.
I'm in quite a similar opinion, because I think the international break probably came at the perfect time for Derby for them to try and regroup. And
I agree with that.
Allow Philip Cocu to try and get his ideas across that little bit more while he got a little bit more time on the training ground. So I've also got a sneaky feeling that Derby might win this, because, as you say, Cardiff haven't been great away from home. And whilst Derby, of course, haven't been brilliant at home, they haven't lost at home. It's only been draws, even though it's not ideal for a side that has the outset of promotion. But I think Derby will edge this one, and I'm going to go for a 2-0 Derby win.
2-0? You don't think that Cardiff will get on the score sheet? Fair enough. So two wins and a draw in favour of the Rams for the Friday night fixture, and that takes us to Saturday lunchtime. Two of the early promotion favourites in Fulham and West Brom. They go head-to-head at Craven Cottage in the 12:30 kickoff. I'll kick things off, and I think this has got draw written all over it, personally. West Brom are unbeaten. They tend to win their home games and draw tricky away games. They got a similar game to when they went to Derby and got a point. I think this could be a high-scoring draw. Neither team can really defend that well. Both were pretty good going forward, and I think this has got two all written all over it, personally. So I'm going to go for 2-2 with Fulham and West Brom. George, do you want to kick us off?
I think it's quite a tough one to call once again. Two good teams, West Brom unbeaten. Fulham, they've had a couple of dodgy results thrown in there, but on the whole, they've been pretty good, and they are going to be up there this season. And for that reason, I actually think that Fulham might just edge this one. Very, very tight game. I think it'll be a good game, though. And I'm gonna go for a 2-1 Fulham victory.
Yeah, it definitely should be one for the neutrals to watch. It should be a good game of football to watch. Both teams' attacking philosophies can't really defend, should equal goals. Probably will end 0-0 now I've said that. Tom, what are you going for?
Yeah, I think it'll be a game on the other end of the spectrum to Derby v Cardiff, really, in that I can see it being quite a pulsating one between two teams with a lot of attacking quality in their squads. But I just think Fulham are a little bit better defensively at the moment. So I think they'll edge it, and I'm going to agree with George and say 2-1 to Fulham.
Interesting. Do you know what? When I wrote my predictions down, I actually wrote 2-1 to Fulham, and I've changed my mind as the podcast has gone on. So I've gone 2-all. So we nearly had a hat-trick of 2-1 wins for Fulham there. But I've gone for 2-all, just to be clear, before people accuse me of changing my mind. And to round things off, we obviously had to go with the Yorkshire Derby between Huddersfield Town and Wednesday, two teams that should have new managers in the dugout to go head-to-head. That new manager bounce is only going to work for one of these teams. So what are we going for? Huddersfield versus Sheffield Wednesday. Start us off, Tom.
I'm going to back Sheffield Wednesday in this one, because I just think, yeah, I know. I think I just think the extra time to prepare under the new manager, I think that'll show. And obviously, it's not known at this point whether Huddersfield will have a new manager at the helm or not. I mean, they might, but they also might not. So I'm going to go 2-0 to Sheffield Wednesday and surprise you all.
That is a surprise. You can count me officially surprised by that.
He definitely gets surprised now.
Yeah, you can definitely have a pint now.
That's what I'm fishing for.
Yeah, I can tell. flattery will get you everywhere. Right, George, what are you going for?
Well, had Danny Cowley not been tipped for the Huddersfield job, I would have said a straightforward Wednesday win with the state that Huddersfield are in at the moment and the expected, though it's a cliche, manager bounce that hopefully Wednesday will inherit. But I think with the Cowley brothers likely to be in the dugout, it's going to be a much more of a tightly contested game. It's going to be very interesting to see what both managers do with the teams, formation-wise, personnel-wise. It's going to be a very, very hard one to predict. And for that reason, I'm going to sit on the fence and I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
I'm going to join you on the fence and go for 1-0 for pretty much the exact same reasons you've said. Had Huddersfield not appointed the Cowley... I mean, it's going to happen. It's not happened as we're speaking, but it is going to. They will be in the dugout on Sunday, bar a very massive U-turn. So I also think that it's got 1-0 written all over it. I really do. I think it'll be a draw for the same reasons. It'll be like you say, I'm only echoing what George has said, but it'll be interesting to see how both teams line up tactically and personnel-wise, because I know both teams have chopped and changed a little bit. Certainly Wednesday have sometimes 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, 4-4-2. So it'll be interesting to see how Gary Monk decides to line Wednesday up personnel-wise. Huddersfield have been quite rigid in their 4-3-3, so... as I've campaigned for, maybe we'll finally see Alex Pritchard playing at number 10. Hopefully not this weekend. It'd be nice if it started next weekend so Wednesday can try and get a win. But I'm going to go for 1-0 at the same. I'm just going to announce before we do our shocks and bankers that I'm going to make a little tweak to the rules now. We always go for like wins and draws, but if you want, you can like have a draw as a shock or a banker, if that makes sense. So if you're absolutely certain that two teams are going to draw, I will allow you to now have like... my banker this week is going to be Wednesday and Huddersfield to draw, because I just think it's got draw written all over it. So I'm going to have that as my banker, and my shock's going to be Stoke to beat Bristol City, because I just think, as I said on the podcast before the international break, I thought, although I would have kept Nathan Jones, I expected him to get the push with a two-week international break if Stoke lost at Birmingham. Stoke did lose at Birmingham, so I expected him to get the push, but he didn't. And I just think that loyalty might be rewarded against Bristol City, because although Bristol City are fifth, they have had the odd dodgy result chucked in here and there. They drew with Middlesbrough before the international break, which was a bit of a surprise. So, and they've conceded the most goals in the top six, which is really weird, because last season they were so good defensively, but they lost Byron Webster, obviously, in the summer. Still coming to terms with how they want to set up. I know they played a back three in some games, a back four in some games, so still coming to terms with how they want to play this season. So I'm going to go with Stoke as my shock, and my banker is going to be Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday to draw. So that slight change to the rules, which I'm going to allow you to obviously take advantage of as well. If you want to give us yours, Tom?
Right, so I sat down just before we started recording, thought, right, I'll prepare my shock and my banker, right? And I thought, right, I'll go Leeds to beat Barnsley for my banker, and I'm not going to do it because that's what I did for the Swansea game and we lost. So my banker, I'm proper sucking up to you now. I'm going to go Wednesday to beat Huddersfield.
Four as a banker. That's bold.
Yeah. And I just think with Huddersfield, I don't think they'll get, even if he's appointed before then, Cowley, I don't think they'll have had any time to work under him. And I think, like George mentioned, the manager bounce that Wednesday, I reckon, will experience under Monk. I just think that feel-good factor will be around the place, having a fresh start, finally having a manager, a permanent manager after all this time. So I'm going to go Wednesday to beat Huddersfield. And my shock is good. See, this is another one I'm not sure whether I'm allowed or not. Can I have Reading to beat Middlesbrough away from home?
I was very much also thinking of that and nearly went for it, but I didn't know if I'd be allowed it. But I'm happy to let you have it because I was going to put it myself.
Yeah, all right.
So I was George, what do you think? Are we letting this pass?
I think so. I think that's an acceptable one.
All right, we'll let you have that, yeah. I was thinking of that one. But I didn't. So you've gone for those two, and George?
For my banker, I'm going to have Charlton to win at home against Birmingham.
Yep.
For my banker. And if I'm allowed it, for my shock, can I sneak Brentford to win at Preston? Difficult place to go to
get. Yeah, no, definitely. To win at Preston. If it was at Griffin Park, I would say no. Yeah, Brent, I mean, they're 7th and 14th in Preston's favour. So, no, I've got no problems with that, Tom.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, we'll let that pass. We're in good spirits today on the podcast, so we're feeling generous to our fellow pundits. No, that's fine. I think those are all acceptable. So that's great, and that rounds off another week of Championship Chat podcast action. Again, thanks to Tom and George for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No, good to have you both back on. A big thank you as well at home for listening. Quick reminder again that you can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram. The handle is the Champ Chat Pod. Make sure to send us in your predictions for the big match previews and your shocks and bankers for the weekend. We'll retweet them, and any that catch the eye, we'll make sure to mention in next week's podcast. You can find us all online as well too. Myself, George and Tom, our Twitter handles will be in the description of the podcast. And you can find that, as of course, in your preferred podcast app of choice, where you can subscribe to get the latest episode of the Championship Chat podcast every single week. Thank you for listening. That's all for now. We'll catch you again next week.